Imagine being told that you won't survive without a new heart, or you won't ever see again without new corneas. Imagine knowing that your entire future depends on somebody else donating those organs, but that the chance of that actually happening is extremely slim. That is the reality for thousands of South Africans who find themselves living suspended lives, waiting for an organ that might never come. Around 4,000 people are on the waiting list at any time. Yet less than 1% of South Africans have registered as potential donors. If it was you or your loved one, wouldn't you do anything you could to change those odds? Welcome to A Gift of Life, a podcast series that examines the subject of organ donation in South Africa and asks what we can do to improve the chance of a second chance for those patients. I'm your host, Pippa Hudson, and over the course of this series, I'll be sharing stories of organ and tissue recipients, donors and their families, as well as the doctors, transplant coordinators and other professionals who help turn one family's tragedy into another family's greatest hope. I hope we'll address many of your questions around organ and tissue donation and perhaps inspire you to sign up as a donor yourself. Over the past few episodes, we've heard a number of different perspectives on organ donation, including powerful personal stories about the impact on both donor and recipient. We've also repeatedly heard guests mention our low donor numbers in South Africa and how other countries, particularly Spain, have far higher rates of registered donors and far higher numbers of transplant operations actually carried out each year. Now, there are many reasons for those differences, but one of them is the difference in the legal framework around organ and tissue donation. So in today's episode, we're going to look at what the law says in South Africa and whether we might ever contemplate changing our legal framework for donation. It's my great pleasure to welcome to the series Professor Melody Labuschagne, who is Professor in Medical Law and Ethics at UNISA's School of Law. She's published both locally and internationally on a number of medico-legal issues, including the regulation of human tissue. Melody, can we start with the legal framework as it exists in South Africa right now? What national laws actually govern the process of organ and tissue transplants in this country?
Okay, yes, thank you, Papa. South Africa has a detailed legal framework governing the donation, removal, use and further processing of tissue. This framework consists of the National Health Act of 2003. In addition, there are also several regulations that describe the requirements for the removal, use, processing and transplantation of tissue, including the retrieval and transplantation of organs. A distinction is made in law, as well as in the clinical context, between the donation of solid organs, which are the lungs, heart, liver, etc., and also the tissue donation, which is often less understood.
Right.
So, and because of the difference between the two, the legal framework also differs regarding regulation of solid organs on the one hand and tissue donation.
Okay. So we have our National Health Act, and it is, as you said, extensive in how it deals with this subject. And we'll dive into some of the reasons for why it's necessary to be so thorough. But first, a question that has come up again and again and again when having conversations around organ donation. And so many of our guests on this podcast series have mentioned this fact that even though a person might have formally registered as an organ donor and declared their intent to be an organ donor and stipulated those wishes to their family and their friends, even made it public on their Facebook page, it doesn't mean a thing if at the end of the day, the family doesn't give consent for transplantation and donation to happen after their death. If the family says no, it will not happen. Finish and klar. Melody, how is that possible from a legal perspective? Why is somebody's declared witnessed statement made while they're sound of mind about their own body, why is that not enough?
Yes, no, absolutely. You're right, Papa. So one of the fiercest criticism against the legislation at the moment relates exactly to the consent provisions in the Act and the fact and the manner in which it is these are applied. Although the Health Act prescribes the manner in which consent from living as well as deceased donors and the manner how it must be obtained, as you said correctly, it doesn't apply in practice. So I think just to go a little bit a step back is to unpack very briefly the legal requirements and then understand why this is so difficult to actually apply in practice. So with regard to deceased donors, the Health Act states that a person who's competent to make a will, and we refer in this context to a person of 16 years and older, may in this will or in a document signed by him or her and at least two competent witnesses, or in an oral statement made in the presence of at least two competent witnesses, this person may donate his or her body to be used after death. Mm-hmm. Now, if there's no such directive, remember, this is the first requirement, then only may the spouse, the partner, the major child, which is the eldest, the parent, the guardian, the eldest brother or eldest sister of that person in that specific order, may they donate the person's body or tissue to be donated to an institution or a person. And unfortunately, this is now where the practice got stuck. Now, these requirements are legally flawed for so many reasons. Now, firstly, when a person dies, a person's will is normally sent to the master of the High Court. And to obtain a copy of a will makes no sense in a transplantation context due to time issues. Yeah. This is actually obvious. The second requirement regarding this legal document to be signed in the presence together with two witnesses, furthermore, is basically nothing else than a living will. And a living will is not legally recognized in South Africa. So that's another complication. And then thirdly, the fact, and as you've said, that the donor's wishes expressed in any way, it could be a donor card, it could be, you know, in a last will and testament, is always overridden by the family members. And this is unacceptable. It's a violation of a donor's dignity and autonomy, which are rights that are entrenched in the Constitution. So we've seen these trends, and the same happens in Canada and in the UK and Australia. So South Africa is no exception. And also, healthcare workers in South Africa are not under an obligation to ask for organ donations. So although a deceased patient may have a donor card, this is often ignored because the healthcare workers dealing with deceased in some institutions do not even raise the issue. Mm. So this is why it's always so important to talk to loved ones and clearly explain wishes regarding donation whilst a person is alive to avoid this conflict from happening. Because once they are aware and you find yourself at that point in life on the verge of death, that your wishes can be respected. Mm-hmm. And then also another issue, and this is not often talked about, is that there's a discrepancy in the Health Act and the regulation regarding the age of a solid organ donor.
Okay.
So the Health Act talks about a person of 16 years and older. But when you look at the 2012 regulations that govern the general control of human bodies, those regulations refer to 18 years. So now what we've seen is that mostly the 18-year-old requirement is observed and not the 16-year-old one. But when you look at the law of statutory interpretation, a main piece of legislation will always prevail over the regulations that normally follow later. So we have to actually adhere to the 16-year-old requirement or fixed age, which is not recognized and it's not applied. Hmm. So that's the deceased donors. But even for the written of the living donors, which the Act only requires a written consent for, there are normally not many, many issues. But the only problem there is that living persons are only allowed to donate if, you know, they donate to another person who's related by, a solid organ by blood to that patient.
Yeah.
So it has to be a relative or a person's spouse or partner. Now, if not, then a special application must be made to the Department of Health to get the minister or a delegated official or head of a health establishment's consent for that to happen. And that is really, really, very, very onerous.
Yeah.
Maybe also for the sake of listeners who may be interested, there are certain limitations on living donors. So tissue may not be retrieved from persons who are mentally ill or tissue that are not naturally replaceable in the human body from persons younger than 18. And with this, we normally think about sperm and eggs from minors younger than 18.
It's fascinating. Look, obviously, as you said, that process can be very onerous of having to apply if you're trying to donate to someone who's not an immediate family member. But there are very good reasons for having that in place, Melody. Important to say, I mean, the intention here is to avoid a situation of organ trafficking or exploitation where somebody is being coerced into making a donation that they don't genuinely want to do from an altruistic position. Is that correct? Is that why these quite strict regulations are there?
That's right. So I think that one of the reasons to actually, you know, the prohibitions on trading or payment for organs and tissue is first also among others to curb organ trafficking. But the main reason is actually legally and philosophically and ethically is related to respect for the inherent inviolability and dignity of the human person, because encouraging financial reward in exchange for bodies and tissue would firstly commodify and objectify the human body and treat bodies and organs as mere things, which we know that they're not. Because, and human bodies conventionally and legally have always fallen outside of the sphere of objects that are exchanged as part of legal commerce. And this has been become a norm in almost all the jurisdictions globally. And also, you know, think of that, paying for a human body reminds us of a time of slavery in the history of mankind that, you know, we wish to forget. So I agree that prohibiting payment for tissue and organs will assist with the curbing, but sadly, this is not reflected in everyday practice where trafficking actually continues despite prohibitions.
Yeah.
And because of that, we have in South Africa scholars who've argued that a strictly regulated organ transplant paradigm, where there are fixed costs to be paid to donors for organs, this may in fact counter trafficking, as it would cut out the middlemen or the brokers in the illegal market. And it may also prevent exorbitant prices to be paid for organs such as kidneys. Because look at who are the actual, they're the ones being exploited. We're talking about those persons who sell organs who are mostly vulnerable, very poor, and they're subjected to very dangerous and unsafe procedures during which their kidneys are removed in the illegal market. However, but now we have this inherent respect for the human body, which is really something very precious. So how do we, in a way, harmonize, you know, getting rid of trafficking, but also recognize the value and inviolability of the human body. So, yes, sadly, in South Africa also, maybe listeners may remember that during the early 2000s, there was a kidney scandal, a transplant scandal in South Africa. And that during that time, 109 illegal kidneys were transplanted at the St. Augustine's Hospital.
Yes,
now, five of those transplants were conducted by removing kidneys from minors.
Sure.
So how that happened was, just briefly, an Israeli organ broker syndicate brought wealthy Israelis who were willing to buy organs to South Africa. Then this syndicate initially bought the organs from other Israelis for $20,000 on average, after which a recipient paid the syndicate an average of $120. Now, this syndicate then moved on to sellers from Romania and Brazil after they realized they could sell kidneys for far less and pay those people only an average of $6,000.
Oh, my gosh.
So hospital staff and doctors at the St. Augustine Hospital were involved in the scandal, some of them. And one of the surgeons that was eventually prosecuted alleged that at the time the illegal operations took place, that were only a small part of a further 220 illegal transplants that took place countrywide.
Gosh.
So as you see, it would seem that the current black market and the shortage of organs for transplantation will remain if the Department of Health doesn't take urgent steps to rectify the status quo.
It's terrifying. And as you described, I mean, the exploitation involved of people who are absolutely desperate is just a terrible thing to contemplate. Having said that, I mean, Melody, there are countries around the world who do pay compensation to donors, don't they?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So an interesting example, a case in point, is Iran. Iran is currently the only country in the world where it's legal to sell one's organs in return for remuneration. Now, with this system in place, Iran has actually found a way to solve their shortage of transplantable kidneys. And the way they regulate it is there are no organ brokers in their system, and the organ transplant system is funded by the government, who pays a fixed price for the organs received. So this is a way to prevent exploitation from taking place. And because there's no broker charging, you know, heavy prices for organs, there's one fixed and regulated price, and this makes the system fair and transparent. And then they have a non-profit government organization that registers buyers and sellers and then puts these sellers into contact with the patients. As far as the government is concerned, the organs are not allowed to be sold privately, and as far as we know, it doesn't happen. The organ waiting list has virtually been extinguished
Gosh.
Because of this. So although they have a waiting period of roughly 1 year before the transplant actually takes place, this is mostly due to ensure that everything goes well and that, you know, all the relevant checks and balances have been ticked. So the buyers and sellers also go for medical and psychological screening, which is good. And the last time I checked, the fixed price for a kidney under their system was $4,600, which is far less than the ones that are sold on the black market.
Yeah, fascinating. Before we leave behind the subject of money and remuneration, Melody, important to say that as much as you cannot be paid for your organ donation in South Africa, we have a system of altruistic donation only. What about medical expenses for the donor? Those are allowed to be covered, are they not?
Absolutely, yeah. So I think it's one of the myths that you will need to pay. Normally, the costs for a transplant and any related medical costs are covered, and so there's no burden on persons donating organs or tissue at all.
Thank you. Now, while we're talking about international alternatives, one of the things that comes up time and again, Melody, is the opt-in versus the opt-out system. In South Africa, we've got an opt-in system. So you have to, as an individual, actively seek out the Organ Donor Foundation, register as a potential donor, and make those wishes known to somebody. And if you haven't done that, the assumption is that you're not a donor. Other countries have moved to an opt-out system where you are assumed to be a willing donor unless you have made the decision to deliberately specify otherwise. And there are many countries that have done that, more than 40 of them. Spain is probably the most famous that a lot of our guests have spoken of, but Sweden, Croatia, Belgium, Colombia, Portugal, Tunisia, I could go on and on. And a lot of activists in South Africa have said they would like to see us move to an opt-out system. But there's a big but here, and it's our constitution, isn't it, Melody? How does the concept sit within our constitution and the Bill of Rights, and particularly what it says about bodily integrity and autonomy?
Absolutely. So yes, indeed. So I think one of the various reasons why an opt-out system is not ideal for South Africa is because it will presume that all South Africans have agreed to donate tissue, which potentially infringes on their rights to personal autonomy and bodily integrity. And I think this is not, you know, only the constitutional issue. I think there's also some myth or unfounded belief that doctors and nurses wouldn't go the extra mile to save the life of a patient if they know the person is an organ donor. Mm-hmm. But this myth has fortunately been debunked by daily practice in transplant centers.
Yeah.
And thirdly, I think an opt-out system also should only be introduced in, and this is the argument, in countries with high literacy levels. And this is because the system relies on the ability of donors to read and write in order to understand risks and benefits of donating, as well as communicate their reasons for refusing to participate. So this, to change the system, will require that everyone should understand and know of their right to opt out. And logistically, you know, this would be very difficult to discuss this individually with millions of possible donors in South Africa. We also sit with the issue where access to information for an entire population in South Africa will remain a challenge. And there are also some authors that argue that this system, the opt-out system, will actually lead to inequality, further inequality, as the poor and the uneducated will have a greater chance of not having their autonomy respected than those of the educated who will be aware of the option to opt out.
Interesting.
But despite all of that, I think it can be overcome. And I do believe that a very, very comprehensive public education program driven by the Department of Health, one that is really carefully planned and implemented, may overcome some of these obstacles so that we can move in this direction as well.
Okay. Also needs to be said that it's not necessarily the silver bullet that overnight fixes the organ donation problem. I mean, Melody, a lot of research that I've read in preparation for this series has pointed out that, yes, a country like Spain has got a very high rate of organ donation, but it's not necessarily due to the fact that they've moved to an opt-out system, but rather that country has taken the issue of organ donation seriously and made systematic change and systemically tackled the barriers to donation. It does ongoing communication around the issue to the public and to medical professionals. It has the budget to support more transplant facilities and more transplant coordinators. You can have those conversations. So there are other sort of factors in place that support a culture of organ donation beyond just the opt-out. Now, you mentioned earlier that our law doesn't make any requirement of a transplant coordinator or a surgical team to approach a family when their loved one has died in circumstances which might lend themselves to organ donation. Yeah. Just important to recap that. So there's no legal directive to medical teams whatsoever to discuss this. Is that something you think could be changed or should be changed?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think this is one specific measure that we've been asking for decades now. I think also, you know, in addition to adopting the opt-out system, there are other measures in addition to this that may increase the number of transplantable organs. And I think beginning with very transparent and frequent communication, you know, to eradicate unnecessary fear and mistrust relating to tissue and organ donation among the public, and also opportunities to talk about these issues, such as this opportunity, you know, on radio is a good example, because people need to know that it's safe, it's fair, legal, and ethical to become an organ and tissue donor. And also a more sustained and multifaceted effort to promote public awareness is also needed. And this is where the Organ Donor Foundation is really playing a huge role. And what we need, and we don't have currently, is a national policy on organ and tissue procurement. And healthcare providers in state and private hospitals must follow a uniform approach into organ and tissue procurement, which is not happening. So what we also don't have nationally endorsed protocols for referral, as I've said. And then there's also no specialist nursing or coordinated training for procurement program for procurement of donor organs, focusing on the donor process, how to manage donors and approaching and communicating with donor families and logistics. So, and what we also need is the Department of Health should finalize and gazette the revised organ transplantation regulations, which is currently in draft form. So what we currently have is completely inadequate. The proposed new draft regulation should be implemented as quickly as and soon as possible. And we also need regulations, you know, regulations that must be supported by transplantation guidelines that apply to everyone in South Africa, irrespective of whether they are in the private or in the public healthcare sector. And this should address transplant listing and organ allocation, very importantly, and also promote public-private partnerships, because this is really very beneficial in alleviating the burden of shortage of organs currently, because hospitals actually have these agreements and, you know, public versus private, and it really assists. And then in furthermore, to support all of this, a standardized procurement policy, which we should also have, supported by an accredited procurement coordinated training program, which is based on extensive clinical and ethical guidelines, and which clearly explains the criteria when decisions are made to whom I actually access transplant services and under which circumstances. And then what the Department of Health also doesn't have is a national organ transplantation database. And such a database could help, because we need data input that should be linked to the accreditation of transplant units and which are audited for quality control and research purposes. And this would really enhance the transparency of transplantation in South Africa. And I think one that I'm not sure if this has been mentioned by any of the previous speakers, but it is now coming to the fore, and it's a recommendation that has been made by some transplant clinicians, is to use in a so-called DCD program that regulates donation in addition to the brain dead patients, and which applies to patients that die following circulatory death. In other words, when that patient's heart is irreversibly stopped and when circulation and oxygenation to the tissues have also irreversibly stopped. Yeah. So in addition to having brain dead patients, we should also allow donations from these patients that after cardiac death, if they die of a suitable cause. And this is now being applied in a number of European countries, and it has grown to such an extent that it's, especially in Spain and the USA, these DCD donor rates now equal the traditional brain dead donor rates.
Gosh. It sounds like we've got a very long way to go still, Melody, in setting up the sort of legal infrastructure that would really make a difference in supporting and growing our donor database. Is there anything else that you see as a legal stumbling block to that process?
Yes. I think further factors that could also be addressed is, as I've already said, the unwillingness of healthcare professionals to refer. Mm-hmm. And then we do have, and it's often raised, the religious and cultural beliefs and perceptions, such as a suspicion of the biomedical system and negative media portrayal of tissue and organ donation, especially following the scandal that happened in the 2000s. And in the case of tissue donation by living donors, there are so many myths and misconceptions. There's a belief that, you know, persons with too many medical problems may not be a tissue or organ donor, and this is not true. Each potential donor is evaluated to determine their suitability to donate based on their medical history. And even persons with heart disease or diabetes or chronic lung disease may still become, or they are potential donors, you know, based on their history. And then others think that to be a tissue donor means that they will not be able to have an open casket viewing for funerals. And this is also unfounded, as the tissue recovery process is so carefully done that the deceased family will not even notice that the tissue or organ has been removed. And when we talk about skin donation, it requires the removal of less than half a millimeter of skin from a donor's legs and back, and that is hardly visible.
Yeah.
And then, as I already said, I think it's important that we communicate that there is no costs involved for the removal of organ and tissue from donors.
Thank you for listening to this episode of A Gift of Life. Please check out our website, capetalk.co.za, to follow the series in full and make sure you don't miss an episode. And I'd really like to encourage you to share these episodes with your own family and friends. Help start the conversation about organ donation in your circles of influence. If you'd like to register as a donor, please visit the Organ Donor Foundation on www.odf.org.za. It's a quick, easy, and free process, and it could save 7 lives.